The head of the U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee says the CIA improperly accessed computers used by congressional staff. What will be the fallout? It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. On this Politics Day, we'll examine what the CIA may have done that has the Senate up in arms. Also, Democrats are dealt defeat in Florida. Is it a bellwether for the midterms? In the wake of the Crimea crisis, a whopping 72% of Americans view Russia as an adversary. And the president gives an interview some call hilarious, others say is undignified. Stephen Schmidt and Tim Hagel with their political analysis. First, this news. It's Politics Day here on River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and lots on our agenda today to talk about with our guest analysts. Stephen Schmidt is with us in our Ames studio, University Professor of Political Science at Iowa State University. Hi, Stephen.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. Tim Hagel in our Iowa City studio, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa. Welcome to you, Tim.
Thank you.
Tim. Let's start off with the big election results. At least some are saying it has quite a bit of meaning. House GOP leaders were jubilant after a Republican won a competitive special election in Florida last night. The results gave a win to candidate David Jolly over Democrat Alex Sink. House Speaker John Boehner attributed the victory in Florida to the fact that Republican candidate was focused on jobs and the economy. But he says Democrats will try to spin the result differently.
Listen, I've stood here after losing some special elections. I tried to put lipstick on a pig, but it was still a pig. So you can bet they'll try to put lipstick on it today, but you all know what the facts are.
John Boehner comments from today. Both parties pouring a lot of money into this race. Tim Hagel, let me start off with you. What does this tell us about the upcoming elections? What's the significance of this one congressional seat special election in Florida?
Well, it's hard to say at this point that, when the Republicans won, so they would like to say that this is a precursor to what's going to happen in the fall. Democrats lost would say, oh, you know, special elections and so forth. So it always depends on who wins and who loses. It's really hard to tell. But some people were suggesting that it was a seat that Democrat Alex Sink should have won. And in fact, early polling from a few months ago had her up 20 points, and they didn't give Jolly a whole lot of a chance. But the Republicans had a good ground game in Florida, and so they're looking at that as to try to replicate it in other places, particularly in Senate races. So we just have to wait and see at this point. I wouldn't say – I think perhaps the best comment that I've seen so far on it was by Michael Barone, who said that it was sort of an uninspiring win for Democrats but a certain uninspiring win for Republicans but a disappointing defeat for Democrats.
Stephen Schmidt, do you have a different takeaway from this special election result?
Yes, I do. Both Tim and I know the literature and political science inside out. We're pros. There's a lot of research on names and elections. If you go into a polling place and you're not highly informed or maybe totally motivated, but you thought you should go vote, would you vote for a Sink or a Jolly? I mean, it's no contest. In a lot of elections,
you really think that's at the heart of this, or no, one of the factors?
It's one of the factors. In a lot of elections, if your name is Kennedy and you're in a district that's, you know, halfway, sort of sympathetic to the Kennedy clan, your probability of winning are much higher, even if you have no experience and the last thing you did was deliver pizzas. So that could be one factor. The other is that, I think, as Tim said, uninspiring election, low turnout. You said these by-elections never really forebode a trend. They're often extremely localized and have to do with, some local issues that may infuse themselves into the campaign. So I don't see it as a trend. And if the Republicans, want to bet their cards on this one, they're making a big mistake.
Mm-hmm. John Boehner's assessment, I understand, did not include any reference to Obamacare. He talked about the economy and jobs. Tim Hagel, do you draw anything from that?
Not too much. It may have been just one of those things where it's one of the themes that he didn't mention every single time. But certainly a lot of people are suggesting that that was important, because even though Alex Sink had not voted for Obamacare, his not being an incumbent at the time, she certainly supported it. And so that the thinking for Republicans, at least, is that all of a sudden that makes it even more difficult for all the incumbents who did vote for Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. It makes it even more difficult for them. We'll have to wait and see, of course, but certainly the Republicans can't run on just one issue, no matter how important that is. And so, as many people have said, they have to be in a position to say, well, what are you for, not just what are you against?
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the other big political news event that's really blossomed, blown up in the last couple of days. The head of the U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee, Senator Dianne Feinstein, has publicly accused the CIA of improperly accessing computers used by congressional staff. Here's Senator Feinstein on the floor of the Senate.
Without prior notification or approval, CIA personnel had conducted a search, that was John Brennan's word, of the committee computers at the offsite facility. I have grave concerns that the CIA's search may well have violated the separation of powers principles embodied in the United States Constitution.
Now, in an interview with NBC's Andrea Mitchell, CIA Director John Brennan denies his agency spied on Congress or interfered with the investigation of the Senate Intelligence Committee.
The matter is being dealt with in the appropriate way, being looked at by the right authorities, and the facts will come out. But let me assure you that CIA in no way was spying on the SSCI or the Senate. We greatly respect the separation of powers between the executive branch and the legislative branch, and we're going to do everything possible to work with the committee in the future on its report. And should they decide to submit that report to us for a classification review, if they want to put it out, we are eager to work with them to put this chapter behind us, because there are so many things on our plate right now for CIA to handle worldwide in terms of, you know, conflicts and international tensions. We have to focus on the future. We want to learn from the past, which we have, and we have done a number of internal reviews. But I look forward to having this this chapter of CIA's history behind us.
CIA Director John Brennan denying the charges that the agency spied on Congress or interfered with the investigation of the Senate Intelligence Committee, charges brought forth by Senator Dianne Feinstein. Stephen Schmidt, he talked about separation of powers there. Is that at the heart of this feud between the Senate and the CIA?
Well, it is. And the CIA, its mission is fairly clear, and that is, at least for most of its existence, it was precluded from conducting its business in the United States. I think after they were the international spy agency. The FBI is the domestic intelligence agency. And, you know, it's changed after September 11 because the agencies were all told to cooperate with each other. But frankly, I mean, listen to his answer. I know you're not going to play it again, but if anybody listened to it, that was a pretzel weasel answer. I mean, it snaked all over the place. In the end, what he really said was, well, we don't want to look at ancient history. We want to look forward because we got all these problems all over the world. Mm-hmm. I think this is a big issue, and I think people like Rand Paul, it's not just the Democrats, but Republicans, must be alarmed by the fact that our international spy agency and covert action agency may very well have been basically taking information off of the computers of staff members who attended a CIA briefing, which apparently is where this has allegedly happened. It's a pretty serious issue, I think.
Mm-hmm. And we'll hear more from Rand Paul a little bit later in the program, some of his comments along these lines from the CPAC conference over the weekend. But Tim Hagel, Stephen Schmidt brings up the point, too, that Feinstein's concerns are echoed by senators from both parties.
Yeah, that's one of the things that makes this particularly important. Aside from the fact that Feinstein's a pretty serious senator, she doesn't usually get that excited about these kinds of things, agree with her or not. But she feels that this is a significant breach. And the fact that it sort of coincides with other things that are going on within the intelligence community sort of makes this a much more bipartisan issue. So it may get more traction than had ordinarily been the case.
Mm-hmm. Stephen, remind us, some may not know, when we talk about back to separation of powers, that the CIA, NSA, they are under the auspices of the White House?
Well, they are. And you know, there is the whole magic, whatever remains of that magic of the American Constitution is essentially that it's different from the North Korean or the Chinese or the Russian political structure, in which there is practically no or no difference between the executive branch and whoever the leader is and the lawmaking branch, the equivalent of Congress. Here there is. And the whole idea was that there has to be accountability, that, you know, each branch is independent. The Congress's oversight powers over the executive branch and over activities of the executive branch is one of the things that holds the power, the power of the president to do anything he wants in check. And if that's broken by executive branch agencies essentially snooping on Congress and extracting confidential information and therefore trying to protect themselves, and we don't know exactly what they did with that information, that's a huge constitutional issue.
Mm-hmm. Some are saying this should cost John Brennan his directorship of the CIA. Do either of you see that or want to make any predictions?
Well, Brennan spoke to that particular question. Somebody had asked him, I think Andrea Mitchell asked him directly, you know, would you step down? And he gave an answer similar to the one that we heard, where it kind of, as Stefan was saying, snaked around a little bit and basically said that, you know, he serves at the pleasure of the president. And I think the bottom line is that if they in fact find that there was some inappropriate spying or snooping going on with these computers that were set up in a separate network, then it will be very difficult for Brennan to stay in office.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa, Stefan Schmidt of Iowa State University, our political analysts in our studios this week to pick apart the political landscape, the developments that are always occurring on an hourly and daily basis related to the CIA matter and the Senate. Earlier this week, speaking to this complicated relationship between Congress, the CIA, NSA, earlier this week, Edward Snowden accused the NSA and its counterparts of setting fire to the future of the internet. This was during a video conference discussion at the South by Southwest Festival in Austin, Texas. He called on the tech community members in the audience to be, quote, firefighters. Now, Snowden spoke remotely from Russia, where he received asylum when he fled the United States last year after leaking classified government surveillance documents to journalists. This is, Stefan, this is very interesting. A man who's been labeled a traitor by many, a hero by others, receiving applause at South by Southwest. What are your observations?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it's not surprising if he had been speaking to the CIA convention in Maryland somewhere or the Conservative Political Action Committee. They would have hurled things at the screen, right, or disconnected him. I mean, the tech community, the entire architecture of the internet, all of the companies that do business on the internet, the big ones, the small ones, are very alarmed at the revelations that came from Snowden. And they thank him and appreciate the fact that he essentially ripped ripped the cover off of this, because they now have to pressure the government to change its approach to intelligence gathering, because it's undermined the confidence in every American tech company in the world. And the Europeans in particular are now talking about essentially chopping off some parts of the internet and creating their own internet. We talked about this, I think, last time. So the United States as a country, American businesses that are in the information technology networking business are taking a very, very serious hit. And Snowden is a guy who may have broken the law and is, you know, probably is going to be punished eventually for it. I would also add that the fact that the Russians now have invaded a sovereign country and are on the hit list of the United States and listed as I think you mentioned, you know, enemies of the American people, doesn't help him very much, the fact that he's, you know, hanging out in Moscow. But, mm-hmm. but you know, the arguments that he's making have shaken the entire concept of how you gather intelligence and have forced Congress and the president and the tech companies to reexamine everything. I mean, we know, you know, that some of the Yahoo, for example, discovered that the British intelligence services were actually snapshotting a lot of chat videos on their chat programs. Mm-hmm. And they were appalled. I mean, Yahoo was absolutely just frightened and furious at this. So there is an adversarial relationship between the need to collect intelligence by the U.S. government and the need for the entire tech industry, the whole internet, to essentially be, you know, much, much more respectful mm-hmm. of the privacy of people.
Less than a minute before we have to take a short break. Snowden, though he was in Moscow, appearing in front of a green screen displaying the U.S. Constitutions, the U.S. Constitution, accusing Senator Feinstein of a bit of hypocrisy, saying, well, you only worry about spying when you're the one being spied upon. Quickly, your observations, Tim Hagel.
Yeah, that's a nice line. But the relationship that a lot of folks have with Snowden is complicated in the sense that they mm-hmm. certainly don't like what the NSA and so forth were doing. But on the other hand, they don't like the way that Snowden brought it out and ran to Russia and so forth. And as Stefan was mentioning, you know, now with what else is going on in the Ukraine and so forth, it becomes more complicated.
Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa, Stefan Schmidt of Iowa State University, back with more of Politics Wednesday in just a moment. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're back with our political analysts this week. Stefan Schmidt of Iowa State University, where he's university professor of political science. Tim Hagel, associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa, chewing through the latest political developments on the landscape. We're talking about Edward Snowden's, Tim and Stefan, appearance at South by Southwest. I think he was linked to Austin by some series of seven computers so that supposedly no one could find him. But also on the weekend, we had something somewhat related to that happening. Let's talk about CPAC that took place over the weekend. Rand Paul romped, Ted Cruz flopped, Chris Christie made nice with the right, and Marco Rubio learned what talking up foreign interventionism is about. It's about the last way to win over the crowd. So went CPAC 2014, according to, I was quoting, Politico's James Holman. Rand Paul won the conference straw poll, 31%. That's nearly triple the vote count for Mr. Cruz, Ted Cruz, the second-place finisher. Marco Rubio finishing seventh. Keep in mind that he almost beat Rand Paul in the CPAC straw poll a year ago. Here's some of what Rand Paul had to say to CPAC this year.
The Sons of Liberty risked everything to guarantee your right to a trial by jury. They would today call out to the president. They would say, we will not be detained, spied upon, nor have our rights abridged. We will not submit, and we will not trade our liberty for security. Not now, not ever. Yet, as our voices rise in protest, the NSA monitors your every phone call. If you have a cell phone, you are under surveillance. I believe what you do on your cell phone is none of their damn business.
Huge applause for Rand Paul, Senator Paul of Kentucky, a speech almost entirely about the NSA and what he sees as its infringement on the rights of Americans, that at the weekend Conservative Political Action Conference. Stefan Schmidt, the privacy issue here, in fact, we're putting that out on our Twitter feed to ask our listeners whether this might be an issue in the upcoming election, a deciding issue. Is that something, an issue that could vault Senator Paul into the White House?
No. And the reason is that he was speaking to a very specific audience. CPAC is not the Republican Party. They may be conservative, and the Conservative Union is that sponsors this is a good organization, been around for a while. But these are mostly younger people. When I asked my students, I have 100 or so in my American government class about that this morning, they don't like to be spied on. But I think if you went out and went to any Republican, you know, get together somewhere in Iowa, a veteran of foreign wars or Rotary Club meeting, people would say, look, we've got terrorists who are coming after us. You know, every month there is something else. Now, toothpaste bombs. And we really need to know what's going on, and we need to gather that information. We're not really spying on people. We're just getting root information. We're not really tapping their phones. We're just finding out where the call is coming from and to whom it's going. And if there's one party to that, especially the foreign part, that is potentially risky, then we'll drill down. And so Rand Paul is very popular with one segment of the voters. But I doubt if that is going to be the compelling message in November. It's, you know, it's still things like Obamacare, healthcare, jobs, the American economy, foreign policy, which is in total and utter chaos and disarray, because just as Hagel and the Obama administration was reforming the military with the view that the world is a nice place with not so many people that we have to worry about the Russians invade Ukraine. Mm-hmm. Those will be the issues.
Okay.
Not, you know.
Yeah, but Tim Hagel, let's get your view on this, how security and surveillance will figure into the upcoming election or 2016, 2014, 2016, and why Rand Paul is riding this horse so strongly.
Well, I would agree with Stefan that it's probably not going to be a major issue. I disagree, though, in terms of how Republicans see it, that there's that counterbalancing side of things saying, okay, we have to find the terrorists and so forth. Mm-hmm. But Republicans are concerned, other Republicans, not just the young ones or the ones that are more libertarian-oriented, are concerned about this too. And having been at a Republican event over the last weekend, the mm-hmm. county conventions, right. that this is something that was at least in the Johnson County platform. I assume it was in platforms of several other counties as well, talking about NSA and so forth. It's not one of those big issues, but it is an issue that will tend to fire up certain groups of people, particularly libertarians, the Ron Paul supporters, who Rand Paul, of course, is trying to bring into his camp in case he decides to run for the presidency.
Mm-hmm. The more this issue gets pressed, does that strengthen the libertarian wing of the GOP, Tim Hagel?
In certain respects. But again, they have to – it's at a certain point, they have to meld in with sort of the overall Republican view of things. And so you've got certain tensions with some social issues, marijuana, gay marriage, and so forth. Are they going to be able to overcome those issues? And will the other Republicans see the NSA issue as being serious enough and get them fired up as well? So we just kind of have to wait and see. But they have to branch out to more than just that one issue.
Mm-hmm. Stefan Schmidt, remind us what CPAC represents within the Republican Party. It is something separate from the Republican Party. It represents what in the Republican Party?
Well, largely represents a kind of younger group. They appeal to a lot of college students and younger Republicans, more libertarians, which is why Ron Paul and now his son Rand Paul do very well there. But, you know, they don't represent the other core of the Republican Party's base. They don't necessarily, I think, represent a Christian faith-based piece of the Republican Party. They certainly don't represent the other very good alternative for Republicans, which is the sort of Jeb Bush wing of the party. Jeb Bush was not invited, and yet the former governor of Florida and brother of the last president is mentioned frequently as someone who has a very good package of issues on which he could appeal to traditional, more establishment country club Republicans and to independents. And yet those folks are not invited. Now, Chris Christie was not invited last year, but he was invited this year. So maybe CPAC kind of does try to infuse some of the not-so-popular individuals, but they don't do that well in the straw poll. Which brings up the whole issue, you know, why do the Republicans love the CPAC straw poll? And, you know, it's touted in the news media, but we're going to eliminate the Ames straw poll because it's a distraction.
Mm-hmm. Is the Ames straw poll still in existence? Do we plan to have that in the future? I know.
Well, Spiker is out and Branstad is in.
Let's talk about that.
That's going to be the end of the Ames straw poll.
Right.
Spiker was a big supporter of it, and Branstad is not.
So. We learned on the weekend that A.J. Spiker will resign as chairman of the Iowa Republican Party. Spiker, we remember, was Ron Paul's Iowa campaign vice chair in 2012. He became the GOP chair that same year. And this move, Stefan, is a boon to Governor Terry Branstad and his allies. They've had skirmishes with A.J. Spiker over what?
Well, the fact that A.J. Spiker and the Rand Paul wing of the Iowa Party took over the party, took over a lot of the precincts, got delegates elected, and practically ran the Iowa delegation at the Tampa Republican National Convention. And, you know, the establishment Republicans and perhaps some of the others, the more sort of faith-based conservative Christian wing of the party, are alarmed about that. They don't like it. They think that that is not the track of the Republican Party that leads to victory, and they want to sort of not make the Iowa caucuses, when they roll around, appear to be so stacked in favor of Rand Paul. Mm-hmm. And so they've accomplished that, and that's what Branstad and the larger establishment has wanted. And I guess the Republicans were not raising a lot of money, and the Rand Paul Spiker sort of piece of the Republican Party had alienated enough people that I think Spiker just figured, I'm going to jump on board my guy and go with him and turn this over to, you know, other folks who are now going to be running the party. The big issue, too, is that if the convention, if the primary doesn't yield good candidates for the Republicans, nobody wins the 30% for Senate and the 3rd District House race. There was a huge fear that if the convention of the Republican Party this summer was controlled by the Rand Paul, piece of the party, they would select someone who was very, outside the mainstream and would therefore lose the election. So there's relief, I think, that if the primary doesn't yield a good candidate, the convention will yield a good candidate because it no longer will be controlled by the Rand Paul wing.
Tim Hagel, how do you see the significance of A.J. Spiker stepping down?
Well, it's pretty much as Stefan was laying out, that there was this tension that was there with the Rand Paul folks. I think some of that's starting to subside. We're sort of seeing a kind of people seeing eye to eye on a variety of issues and sort of have this new energy that's not a bad thing for the Republican Party to have. We have to see who's going to be the new chairman and what happens. If this is somebody with some experience and can step in, then some of the problems that we've seen in the past with the Republicans, fundraising Stefan mentioned and so forth, may be past us. But if it's somebody without experience and the tensions still continue and depending on the results for the 2014 elections, then it still could be problematic.
I see that Kathy Obradovich of the Des Moines Register, the columnist, is tweeting that Danny Carroll says he's, quote, reasonably certain that he'll be the next chair of the Iowa GOP, Danny Carroll?
Well, you know, it could be. There were some concerns about him becoming the vice chair and so
who
forth.
Who is Danny Carroll? Remind me.
I don't know all of his background, okay, particularly. Certainly an experienced person, so in that sense, a good person to have that kind of experience. But whether he's going to fit well within the overall structure, kind of have to wait and see.
Okay. Anything about state lawmaker Danny Carroll, Stefan?
Nope.
Okay. Let's talk about some more Iowa politics. The Quinnipiac, a new poll is out about our governor's race this morning. Stefan, you want to tell us about the findings there?
Well, Branstad does extremely well. And one of the things that I think we ought to look at more than the sort of gap between Jack Hatch and Branstad is the Branstad is a strong leader piece of that poll, which, if I recall correctly, I don't have it in front of me.
I have
right
it.
Now.
I can.
Like 68% or something, I think.
Iowans approve of the job Branstad is doing by 55% to 35%, down from 58 to 32%, slightly down in job approval.
Right.
But in the matchup to Hatch, which I think you're referring to, right, leading Hatch 46 to 35%, that's down from 49 to 33%. So in both
areas sort of dropping. Tim Hagel, what do you see there? A reason for the governor to worry at all?
Not particularly. There were two things when I was looking at the numbers earlier that sort of stood out for me. The first is that, yes, there's a bit of a drop, but when you look at the margin of error for this poll, which is a little bit under 3%, which is good, plus or minus, and consider the margin of error for the previous poll, it's, you know, there's overlapping there. Now, if you see a third poll come out where the numbers are still going in that same direction, that might be somewhat worrisome, although we're still not in sort of the really feisty part of the campaign yet. That's yet to come. The other thing that concerned me a little bit about that poll was the breakdown of the weighted breakdown of the respondents was 25% Republicans, 28% Democrats, and I think 39% independents, no party folks, if I'm recalling the numbers correctly. And for midterm elections, that's not going to reflect the turnout that a lot of the no party folks, there's a big drop off in their turnout for midterm elections.
Who turns out in midterms?
Republicans are the ones that tend to turn out more. They're usually a couple percentage points higher than Democrats, although the big difference was in 2010, given it was a wave year for Republicans, the Democratic turnout was down. In terms of the division of the actual turnout, in 2010, it was Democrats actually had 33% of the vote, Republicans about 30%, and the rest for the no party. So the no party folks still a lot, but their overall turnout is down. And the Republicans are the ones that, again, do tend to turn out.
Keeping in mind these latest poll numbers, Stefan, Jack Hatch seen as the leading contender at this point. Is anybody else vying for the Democratic nomination at this point?
You know? I think Jack Hatch has it wrapped up.
Okay. What will Jack Hatch need to do in order to unseat Branstad? Or is it only a huge misstep on our governor's part that even could give him a window? Stefan.
Anything can happen in an election, you know.
No predictions from your side.
No, yeah, I mean, Branstad is so well established, has a lot of money. You know, I just think it's an uphill climb, isn't it, for Jack Hatch to catch up with.
Okay, well, let's put both of you in the place of an advisor to the campaign of Jack Hatch. Where are you going to point? Where are you going to point to as far as Governor Branstad's vulnerabilities, Tim Hagel?
Oh man,
is it a plate of armor that's impenetrable?
It's not impenetrable, and again, that's there's always a Stefan saying sometimes you just never know what's going to happen, but you almost have to hope for some sort of huge mistake on the part of the Branstad Reynolds campaign or something else to really give you that opening when you're looking at numbers like this. And the economic situation in Iowa is better than the national average, maybe not as good as we would like it to be. The financial situation of the state is improving. Basically, Hatch will have to focus on some of the common themes that the Democrats will focus on, things like, again, pushing Obamacare, Affordable Care Act. But on the other hand, you know, this is at the state level, but still that's doesn't seem to be a real winner for the Democrats.
What about simply the infusion of new blood? What do we have, a six-term governor?
Well, but the problem that – this is what the argument that Olson could have made, the generational argument. Hatch isn't really going to be able to make that argument because he's been around for a long time too.
Yeah. The other thing is the number that I was referring to, which is down. It's the 33rd item in the poll that we're referring to. Is would you say Terry Branstad has strong leadership qualities? 68% of the respondents said he has strong leadership qualities. That's a pretty amazing number. And then the number on do you think Terry Branstad is too liberal or too conservative? Or about right, 51% of the respondents said he was, quote, about right, which is also important, especially when it comes to the general election where the no-party people, that makes a difference to them if they think somebody's leaning too far in one direction. I hate to say this, but I think those numbers in that poll are probably more important in the end when people go into the actual polling place than the matchup between Hatch and Branstad in which Branstad has sort of slipped a little bit. I mean, overall, people think Branstad is a strong leader by an astonishing percentage that any other governor in the U.S. would die for.
Okay. Stefan Schmidt and Tim Hagel, we have about 5 minutes left of our conversation. Let's get to this sort of lighter side of politics. with a serious edge to it. The president gave an interview this week that some called hilarious, others said was undignified. President Obama appeared on the online talk show Between Two Ferns. Yes, that's the plants, the ferns. Between Two Ferns, posted on the Funny or Die website. He traded barbs during this mock interview, I guess we could say, with comedian Zach Galifianakis about the Affordable Care Act. A White House advisor told the New York Times the interview was part of an ongoing effort to communicate with young people and to encourage them to sign up for health insurance before the enrollment period ends this month. Here's just a little clip toward the end of this offbeat banter between the president and comedian Zach Galifianakis.
So do you go to any websites that are .coms or .nets, or do you mainly just stick with .govs?
No, actually, we go to .govs. Have you heard of healthcare.gov?
Here we go. Okay, let's get this out of the way. What did you come here to plug?
Well, first of all, I think it's fair to say that I wouldn't be with you here today if I didn't have something to plug. Have you heard of the Affordable Care Act?
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. That's the thing that doesn't work. Why would you get the guy that created the Zune to make your website?
Healthcare.gov works great now. And millions of Americans have already gotten health insurance plans. And what we want is for people to know that you can get affordable health care. And most young Americans right now, they're not covered. And the truth is that they can get coverage all for what it costs you to pay your cell phone bill.
Is this what they mean by drones?
The point is that a lot of young people, they think they're invincible.
Did you say invisible? Because
No.
Think like that's improbable.
Not invisible, invincible. Okay. Meaning that they don't think they can get hurt.
I'm just saying that nobody could be invisible if you had said invisible.
I understand that.
Okay, we have put the entire video, it lasts 5 or 6 minutes, on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. Have a look at it. I think whatever your political persuasion, you'll find a few chuckles in it for you. So Stefan, funny or undignified, was it effective? Are you still there, Stefan?
I am here, yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry, we had a little problem there.
Yeah,
okay.
We live in Ames, Iowa, and sometimes we get interference from solar flares.
All right.
President Obama drove an enormous amount of traffic to the federal health insurance marketplace. 19,000 people clicked through from Funny or Die to healthcare.gov.
So it worked.
By mid-afternoon yesterday, and I don't even know what the number is today, but the buzz from that was gigantic. And obviously it was all from the kind of people. I mean, who the heck watches Funny or Die? Do you watch Funny or Die?
I actually do, Stefan.
Oh, okay, well then,
Tim Hagel, what is your
Those
view
are
on,
young
on
people,
this on this tactic here by the president?
Yeah, I do not watch Funny or Die particularly. If you're a fan of Galifianakis and so forth, you probably are going to think it's amusing. Republicans have complained about the president doing these sorts of things for a while, the slow jam with Jimmy Fallon,
yes,
and some other sorts of things. Certainly the president can come on these shows and sort of reach that new audience, that's the idea behind Obama. But then, I'm thinking back to, and dating myself a little bit here, but the days of Laugh-In, which then Richard Nixon appears on as the cameo and says, "Sock it to me." And,
yes, that's going back a few decades.
Yeah, it is.
Richard Nixon got reelected.
He did. He appeared on it. Whether he was undignified, that's
okay.
Gentlemen, sort of a whole second
you
question.
Hear the music. We're going to wrap up now. Thank you, Tim Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa. Always great to have your insights. Stefan Schmidt, University Professor of Political Science at Iowa State University. Thank you for stepping into our studio, Stefan. And to Tim, always a delight.
Welcome.
Take care.
All right. River to River is produced by Ben Stanton, Sarah Bowden, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. It's a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer.